Joy Cardine with you on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good morning. It's 9.5 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Thursday, March the 27th. We will talk about that maverick straight talker, the war hero, John McCain, this hour. Our guest this hour says that description that I just used for John McCain is how you usually hear John McCain described by a largely adoring press. And that's a problem because John McCain, the presumptive GOP nominee for president, is getting a free ride. We will examine why this is and wonder if you agree or not. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Please include your first name and your community with your email. Our guest this hour, and we are very happy to have him with us, is Paul Waldman, a columnist for The American Prospect. He is the author or co-author of several books on politics and the media, including Being Right is Not Enough, What Progressives Must Learn from Conservative Success. And he is the co-author with David Brock of a brand new book, Free Ride, John McCain and the Media. And he joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning.
So, John McCain and the media love John McCain.
They absolutely do. There's been no politician really in decades who's had the kind of warm relationship with the press that John McCain has had. And the result is that the rules always seem to be different for John McCain when it comes to press coverage.
What do you mean?
Well, let's just take a couple of examples. You mentioned some of these just a moment ago. For instance, mm-hmm. if there's one word that you'd have to come up with to describe John McCain, what would it be? Mm-hmm. Almost anybody would say maverick.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Now, why is that? Well, that's because the media tell us over and over and over again that he's a maverick. Mm-hmm. In the months of January and February of this year, he was referred to in newspapers and on television as a maverick over 1,300 times. It's almost become part of his name.
Mm-hmm.
And what reporters seldom do is ask whether or not that image really is accurate and take any time to kind of delve into it and give us any sort of details beyond just repeating the word. But if you actually look at the record, what you see is that it isn't really that the story is much more complicated than that. The fact is that John McCain votes with his fellow Republicans about 85% of the time, which puts him pretty much in the middle of the pack among partisan senators.
Yeah. You know, here in Wisconsin, we also, though, remember John McCain for crossing party lines and going against his own party in teaming up with Russ Feingold for the McCain-Feingold Act.
Well, that's an interesting mm-hmm. story, and that actually has a great deal to do with the affection that the media mm-hmm. have for him. There you had an example where it was really something that most Americans didn't really care all that much about. It was portrayed in the press, though, as this kind of lonely crusade where it was mm-hmm. just John McCain who was fighting against this corrupt system. Well, you know, the fact is that almost every Democrat in Congress supported that bill, so he wasn't all that lonely. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of the interesting side notes to that is that when the bill was first introduced, it used to be called Feingold-McCain, but gradually the press turned that story into one in which John McCain was the hero, and it came to be called McCain-Feingold. And it became sort of almost a vessel into which reporters could pour their disgust with the political system. So the reporting of campaign finance was all about how terribly corrupt the system was and how this noble lone crusader, John McCain, was taking it on. But there's something that McCain-Feingold has in common with almost all of the times in which John McCain has gone against his party. What you see in those rare instances is that in almost every case, it's an occasion on which the Republican Party is on the wrong side of public opinion. And so when McCain supports campaign finance reform, as he did then, or when he introduces a bill to address global warming, or when he supports FDA regulation of tobacco, as he did for a time, that he's not taking any kind of a political risk, because what he's doing is going to where the public is. Now, it may anger a few senators in the Senate of his party, but for somebody who has national ambitions, it's actually quite a politically deft move.
Yeah. We also, I don't know, many people have affection for John McCain because he was a war hero and for his experiences as a prisoner of war in Vietnam.
And this is something mm-hmm. that is key to the story that mm-hmm. the press tells. Absolutely. And what you find is that It's dropped into stories when just literally thousands of times over the years, often when it has no relevance to anything that the story is actually about. You know, you'll see these references like John McCain, who was a prisoner in war in Vietnam, today gave a speech on the economy.
Yeah.
And you say, well, what did that have to do with the speech on the economy? But what you find is that that reporters always have his experience in Vietnam in the forefront of their minds, and that and it becomes kind of the entire story that they tell about character. Now, we all know that reporters are obsessed with character when it comes to presidential candidates, and there's no question that what happened to him 40 years ago in Vietnam is a part of John McCain's story, but if you look at the coverage, it almost seems like it's the only thing that should be the measure of his character. And another part of this that the press tells is that he's extraordinarily reluctant to use it to his political advantage. He's too modest to ever exploit his Vietnam service. Now, I should say, he has every right to if he wants to. It's his history. Nobody has ever disputed the facts around it. No one disputes that he was very courageous. But you hear reporters say this over and over again, that, oh, he really doesn't want to talk about it. He's too reluctant. But the truth is that he talks about it all the time.
Yeah,
and his entire career, really, has been built on his Vietnam service. From his first run for Congress in 1982, you know, that race was one where he was being pilloried as a carpetbagger because he had only lived in Arizona for a couple of years and had just bought a house on the day that the previous congressman retired so he could live in that district. And his kind of dramatic comeback to that charge was that the place that he had lived longest in his life was the Hanoi Hilton. And it was very moving. And what you see is that at every stage of John McCain's career, it's his Vietnam story that has kind of catapulted him to the next level. And as I say, it's his perfect right to talk about it. You know, politicians since George Washington have exploited or utilized their military service to their advantage. But the press tells us that he doesn't do that because he's too noble and too modest. But that's not actually the true story.
Here's John McCain recently talking about war.
I hate war. And I know very well and very personally how grievous its wages are.
That's an example.
And when he says that, he knows that the stories that are going to be written about that speech are going to include copious references to his Vietnam War service. And, you know, the ads that have been run for his campaign this time have showed pictures of him as a POW. He and his staff understand very well the political value of it, and that's fine. But what isn't fine is for reporters to turn around and tell us that that's not what he's doing when, in fact, that is what he's doing.
Yeah, he did seem to, you know, take on the Bush administration over the issue of torture, though, and bucking the Bush administration, and I think that caught the hearts and minds of people in the press and around the country. No.
Well, that's another great example of how the stories that get written seem to always paint McCain in the best possible light. I mean, what happened there? You had this, people might remember from a year or two ago, you had this great showdown between McCain and Bush over whether or not we were going to continue to torture. Mm-hmm. And the way the story was written was that Bush blinked and he gave in to McCain. And, of course, all the stories talked about how he himself had endured torture and how that made him a crusader on this issue. And he had the moral high ground. And there were all these terrifically complimentary stories toward John McCain. And then when the actual bill came out, it turned out that Bush really hadn't blinked. And he had included lots of clauses and things that would allow him basically to torture whenever he wants to and to ignore the Geneva Conventions whenever he wants to. And the stories that were written about that didn't talk about how McCain had basically given in. And then we had a recent bill which would have required the government to adhere to the regulations in the Army Field Manual, which forbid torture, and McCain voted with the administration on that. So, you know, even on this issue, which seems so personal to him, the story that gets told in the press when it comes to McCain isn't really the true story. It puts him in the best possible light, but it leaves out some important facts.
Yeah. And then when it comes to his reputation as being a straight talker, the press uses that phrase all the time, but then doesn't talk about the detours that he's taken.
Yeah, they do repeat that phrase a lot, and they'll even in interviews with him sometimes say, "Well, Senator McCain, give us some straight talk." You see that phrase again and again, and this is a phrase that was created by the McCain campaign, really, in 2000 and continues today. But what you find is that pretty much like any other politician, John McCain is willing to shade the truth. He's willing to use talking points. He is willing to flip-flop for political advantage. But that's not the story that gets told by the press. And so it's just another demonstration of how the rules seem to be different for him. You know, let's take an example of flip-flopping. We can use ethanol, for instance. Mm-hmm. In 2000, he decided not to compete in the Iowa caucus, and he was a big opponent of ethanol. Mm-hmm. Not only the ethanol subsidies, but also just the very existence of it. He said it doesn't do anything for the environment, it doesn't do anything for the economy, and he railed against it. Then in 2008, he decided he was going to compete in the Iowa caucuses, and all of a sudden, he had a turnaround on ethanol, and now said that it was actually a good thing for the environment and the economy and everything. So if that had been a different politician, what the reporters would have done is said, aha, look at this. What a flip-flop. What a flip-flopper. Obviously, he's just doing this for his political advantage. Doesn't that show you just how phony he is? But since it's John McCain, what did they do? Well, they ignored it because it didn't cohere with the story that they had been telling about him for so long, which is he's the only politician who doesn't do anything for political advantage. It's all about principle with John McCain. That's the story that the reporters tell. And when they see evidence that counters that, they just brush it aside.
We're talking with Paul Waldman. He is a columnist for the American Prospect, and he's co-author of the new book, Free Ride, John McCain and the Media, in which he talks about the media's love affair with John McCain. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Happy to have you along and invite your participation as we talk about how the press, how the media treat John McCain. Our guest says, with kid gloves, with adoration, he's co-written a book, Free Ride, John McCain and the Media, and we're examining how John McCain gets a free pass from many in the media anyway. And I'm wondering, Paul Waldman, before we go to the phones, is this any different, say, than how there's been criticism that the media have been very easy on Barack Obama? No one says the media's been easy on Hillary Clinton, I don't think. But, I mean, is it any different? Do the media treat John McCain any differently than other presidential candidates like Barack Obama?
Well, I think Barack Obama would give his right arm to have the kind of press coverage that John McCain gets. And what you see with Obama is that, like most politicians, he has ups and downs. You know, he had some very good periods, especially around Iowa, when he was rising, and there was a lot of stories about, you know, this sort of new movement for Obama. A lot of good coverage there, and then he's had some bad periods. But with McCain, it's really all good. There really are no bad periods, even when there are stories that are detailing things that are going wrong. You know, he had a period during 2007 where his campaign was in poor shape. But if you look at that coverage, what you see is that even John McCain's bad coverage is better than other candidates' good coverage. Mm-hmm. The stories were all kind of lamenting how the process was the thing that was sick, and not so much McCain. That even someone as noble as John McCain was being forced to pander to the religious right and things like this, but it didn't bear on his character, because as far as reporters are concerned, his character is a given. It's a given that it's unimpeachable and impeccable.
Yeah. Why don't you compare the treatment John McCain received regarding ministers that he wanted to associate with, and the coverage of Barack Obama's received in the ministers that he associates with?
Well, we've all seen all this coverage about Reverend Jeremiah Wright, and what the reporters do is they interpret that to reflect on Obama's character, and they say, what does it say about him? What kind of questions does it raise? Well, the fact is that McCain sought out and received the endorsement of John Hagee, who is a fundamentalist minister in San Antonio who believes that the United States has to invade Iran in order to hasten the coming of Armageddon, who's had all kinds of rhetoric that some people think is anti-Semitic. Then you have someone like Rod Parsley, who McCain called a spiritual guide, who is, frankly, an out-and-out con artist who tells people that if you send him your money, then God will make you rich, and claims that he can heal babies who are born without brains. And these are the kind of people that John McCain has sought out the support of. And yet, when that happens, how do reporters interpret that? They say, well, you know, he just needs to secure his base, and it doesn't reflect poorly on him. It's just part of the process, and you know, he'll be back to being that straight-talking maverick as soon as he's done securing that base. It's just necessary. It doesn't mean that he's a panderer. It just means that the process necessitates him pandering. But when other candidates do it, it says something about them personally.
Let's go to the phones. Rocky in Hillsboro. Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, thank you. Good morning. It seems to me, if I remember correctly, in the 2004 election, Kerry toyed with the idea, or maybe it was just a campaigning thing, of asking John McCain to be his running mate for a day or two. There was a little bit of that in the news, and they both made statements about it, and McCain said, well, no. He said, I'm a Republican now, and I've always been a Republican. I'll remain a Republican. Now, did that actually occur, or is this just my imagination? But I think if it occurred, it kind of shows, and I'm pretty sure it did. I think it kind of shows if your opponents think of you in this light, well, then you probably are not quite as partisan as a lot of politicians are.
Well, this is it. It's tough to tell exactly what happened because everybody has a slightly different story on this, unfortunately. What is clear is that they, Kerry and McCain certainly had some discussions about this. And it seems that Kerry told McCain that if you're interested, I would love to have you as my vice president, somebody to that effect. The questions about exactly when the offer was made and how it was made, they're a little muddled because Kerry and McCain tell slightly different stories about it. What he has said is that he was not interested because he's a Republican. And this, it points to something interesting, that there's a lot of people on the left who seem to be convinced that secretly, deep down, McCain really is something different than his record would indicate. That despite not only a long and consistent conservative voting record, but his own protestations about how conservative he is, that deep down he's a secret liberal. This is what a lot of liberals seem to think. And you find this again and again, that you know they'll point to a statement here or a vote there and say, despite everything that it would appear from his long career in Washington, deep down we just have this suspicion that he's with us. Mm. And
isn't that reinforced by conservative talkers like Rush Limbaugh and others who were really beating him up a while back?
It is, and there's this strange kind of cycle that goes on. And when you talk to, there are also, not only are there some liberals who think that he's a secret liberal, but there are also conservatives who think that he's a secret liberal. And one of the interesting things that they say, if you ask them why, is, well, look at how much the media loves him. He must be a liberal, because we know that the media have this terrible liberal bias, and if they love John McCain, then he must be a liberal. And the fact is that the media's love for McCain has nothing to do with ideology. It's something that McCain implemented, an extraordinarily smart and well-executed strategy to get the press on his side that he's been working on for over a decade now.
Yeah, like feeding them?
Excuse me?
Like feeding them?
Well, you know, that's part of it. And you may be referring to this little event that he had out on his ranch in Sedona, Arizona, not long ago, where if you go to YouTube, Meghan McCain, his daughter, has posted a video where you can see all the reporters, these national reporters, hanging out on the McCain ranch and having a grand old time eating his barbecued ribs. And you know, one of the things it points to is that this is really something that all candidates try to do. They all want to get the press on their side. McCain is just better at it than anybody else. And the question for reporters, you know, there's nothing sinister about his efforts. I mean, he's just more successful than other politicians. But the question is, what kind of an effect is it having on the reporters, and are they losing their objectivity? And it's okay to go to his ranch and eat his ribs, but the question is, when it comes time to write your story, is the taste of the barbecue sauce still in your mouth? Or can you step back and say, okay, you know, I know that he's a charming guy, and I've had a great time with him on the bus, but am I going to let that color the kinds of conclusions that I make and how I interpret the events of the campaign? Up until now, it has. And the question is that going to continue?
Yeah. So I didn't know this until I read this in your book, that the Arizona press, the Arizona paper, has been critical of him, maybe more so than the national media, and he's kicked that reporter off the Straight Talk Express.
Yeah, this was that specific incident came in 2000. The reporter, he wouldn't let the reporter from the Arizona Republic, which is the largest newspaper in Arizona, he wouldn't let her get a seat on the Straight Talk Express, where he was, you know, carousing with all the national media. And it was just one indicator of the kind of relationship he has with the Arizona press. If you live in Arizona, you get a much different portrait of John McCain than you do anywhere else, because unlike the national media, the Arizona media have a much more complete and nuanced picture of John McCain that they paint. It's a warts-and-all portrait. They talk about his good sides and also some of his less-than-admirable qualities. You see that in the Arizona reporting of him also. As a consequence, his relationship with them is extraordinarily contentious and has been for many, many years. It's not only is it a reflection of the fact that, for instance, they've reported on his prickly side, the fact that McCain has a positively volcanic temper and can be extremely vindictive, but he's demonstrated it in the way that he's treated those reporters. And, you know, we quote a lot of Arizona reporters in the book talking about how, you know, every reporter knows that they're going to be snubbed by McCain and they're going to be berated by McCain, and that just comes with the territory. That's not the way he treats the national press, because he has implemented a very different strategy with them, and it yields extraordinary benefits for him.
We're talking with Paul Waldman. He is co-author of Free Ride, John McCain and the Media, in which he and his co-author David Brock detail the favorable treatment John McCain has received from the press. And I want to talk about this recent mistake of John McCain's next.
Well, it's common knowledge and has been reported in the media that that Al-Qaeda is going back into Iran and receiving training and are coming back into Iraq from Iran. That's well known.
He was giving this speech on a recent trip to Iraq and then had to correct himself after Joe Lieberman whispered something in his ear.
Senator McCain. The Iranians are training extremists.
Senator McCain.
Not Al-Qaeda. Yeah. Not Al-Qaeda.
Senator McCain.
I'm wondering, Paul Waldman, if you think he was sufficiently chastised for making that mistake recently.
Well, this is another example that demonstrates how the rules are different for John McCain. If it had been a different candidate who had said it, let's say it was Barack Obama, how would the reporters have interpreted that event? They would have said, well, this raises serious questions about whether or not he's prepared to be commander-in-chief, whether he has a sufficient understanding of the different players in the Middle East and the you know, what the forces are that are driving terrorism and all that. They would have said that the event calls those things into question when it comes to Obama, had it been him. But when it's John McCain, that's not what they say, because they already have a story about John McCain, which is that he is extraordinarily experienced and knowledgeable when it comes to matters of foreign affairs and national security. And so when he does something like that, they give it a completely different interpretation. The word they attach to is that he misspoke, as though it was just kind of a slip of the tongue, when in fact he said it, I think, four separate times. Mm-hmm. If part of that story that they've been telling about him gets threatened by something like that, they almost become his protectors. That they're going to, you saw that in the coverage of that incident where they said, well, you know, despite the fact that he said this and corrected himself, everyone knows that John McCain, you know, has a deep knowledge of foreign affairs. Whereas I think that what we would expect of reporters is to, instead of accepting that somebody has a deep knowledge of foreign affairs just because they've been saying that for a long time, they should use those events to see if that's really true. And, you know, I think that you can point to a lot of evidence that when he talks about foreign affairs, his statements don't display any particular knowledge, and they tend to be overly simplistic. And, you know, in this case, that's something that we would expect coming from George W. Bush, right? That, like, all our enemies are the same. And if we don't like Iran and we don't like Al-Qaeda, well, then they must be together. That's kind of what we heard from the Bush administration about Saddam Hussein and Al-Qaeda. But the fact is, of course, that Iran is not training Al-Qaeda, because Al-Qaeda is militantly Sunni, and Iran is a Shiite country, and they are, for all intents and purposes, enemies. The events of the campaign, when it comes to McCain, don't get used to update the story about him, the picture of him that's being painted. They are either rejected or highlighted, depending on whether they cohere with the picture that's already been painted by the press for the last decade.
Back to the phones. Rebecca in Platteville. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi.
I have, you know, several items that are very important to me, and I kind of know McCain's stand on them. I mean, I'm anti-war. We never should have been in there. Obviously, he considers to be there for 100 years. He's anti-choice, and I think a woman should have the final say. And I want universal health care, and I don't think that he's for that. But the one item that I never hear him talked about is his environmental record. And Sierra Club just came out with their yearly annual rating of all the people in Congress, and he got a zero.
Yeah.
Now, Stevens in Alaska, who wants to drill every little pothole and get into the Arctic Circle and mow down every tree and kill every wolf, got a seven.
So, Paul Waldman, we don't really go through John McCain's record with a fine-tooth comb?
No, the press doesn't. And, you know, you can say that this is a weakness of political coverage in general, that none of the candidates are getting the kind of thorough investigation of their records that they ought to. But if it's true for anybody, it's even more true for John McCain. What you find in the coverage of him is it tends to just fall back on telling those stories about how candid he is and how great he is to give an interview to, and how he's delivering straight talk and he's a maverick, and these same kind of tropes that get repeated over and over and over. And what's missing is any kind of an investigation of his record. And that's certainly true on the environment. It's true on foreign affairs. It's true on economics. It's true on almost any issue you can point to.
Next, let's go to John in Milwaukee. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. There were two things I had read about in blogs, and a lot of times I don't believe them, so I always check them out. And two of the things that surprised me, that looks to me like they're true, that I haven't heard about, was one, Cindy, his present wife, is actually kind of a trophy wife who's 20 years younger than him. He had met her in 79, and he divorced his first wife, Carol,
yeah,
in 1980.
You hadn't heard that before, John.
No. Then it goes on. She had a prescription. Cindy, his present wife, had a prescription drug addict and was stealing drugs from a charity called American something or other that she had organized.
And you think the national media should have made more of a story out of that?
That was one thing, because if Barack Obama's wife was caught embezzling drugs from a charity, I'm sure that would be front page news for weeks.
Yeah.
But the other one that was interesting, too, is that during one of the reasons he might not be talking about his Vietnam experiences is that in 1967, he was on a aircraft carrier, the USS Forrestal, and the USS Forrestal had an accident where there were two pilots on jets that were ready to take off, and a missile was accidentally fired. And John McCain was one of the pilots that was set and ready to take off, and 137 sailors were killed on this. And I was surprised. I thought, well, geez, how come I've never heard of this?
Yeah, I guess I've heard of both of those issues, Paul Waldman.
Yeah, I've never heard any kind of evidence that he was responsible for what happened on the Forrestal.
No.
But, you know, let's take the Cindy McCain question. There's a number of different ways in which his own personal life is treated differently than other candidates' personal lives. Now, we could debate about how much any candidate's personal life should be an issue, but I don't think anyone would say that it should be an issue for some candidates but not for others. Everyone should be treated by the same standard. But, you know, for instance, Hillary Clinton gets badgered a lot for not releasing her tax returns.
Mm-hmm.
And this big question is about how much money Bill Clinton has made, et cetera. Well, nobody ever mentions that John McCain hasn't released his tax returns either. Now, his political career really rests on Cindy McCain's money and connections. When he came to Arizona, when he married her and came to Arizona, her father was the owner of one of the biggest beer distributorships in America, and it was his father-in-law's money and connections that really made his political career. And, you know, the reason that the McCains have a couple of big houses and that have many, many millions of dollars is because it's all Cindy McCain's money. Now, again, if one candidate is going to be questioned about releasing their tax returns, then all candidates should. But he hasn't released his tax returns either. And that's something that I think that there are just sort of different rules for different candidates. There's an assumption with the Clintons that there's something nefarious going on, that whatever they do, there's always some kind of Machiavellian intention behind it, and there's something sinister there. But the assumption the press make with McCain is that there's never anything sinister, that he is pure of heart, and the one person in the world of politics who has an unimpeachable integrity. And that's, you know, that's for instance why they don't look at the fact that his campaign is larded with lobbyists. By the way, if people go to we have a website, McCainsFreeRide.com, where we have a whole chart of McCain and his lobbyist connections. You know, one of the stories that the press has told about McCain is that he's the one who stands up to the special interests. He's the scourge of lobbyists. But when you actually look at the people who are working for him, his campaign manager is a corporate lobbyist, his deputy campaign manager is a corporate lobbyist, his chief political advisor is a corporate lobbyist, his chief fundraiser is a corporate lobbyist, his campaign co-chair is a corporate lobbyist, and there are something like 66 different corporate lobbyists who are either on his campaign staff or are big-time fundraisers for him.
And then let's also talk about the lobbyist who he was linked to back in the 2000 campaign, that his own campaign workers thought that he was having a romantic relationship with her. But the New York Times runs this story, and this doesn't become a story about John McCain. It becomes a story about the ethics of the New York Times.
Yeah, you know, a couple of people have said to me recently, well, you know, he's not getting such great coverage. Look at that New York mm-hmm. Times story. Well, it actually proves just the opposite. Mm-hmm. If you the meat of that story was this tale about a company called Paxson Communications, which had a sale of a television station in Pittsburgh that they wanted the FCC to expedite. And they gave John McCain $20,000 in contributions, them and their attorneys. He was very friendly with their lobbyist. They were flying him around the country on their corporate jet. And he had a meeting with Bud Paxson, the chairman of the company, that McCain denied that ever took place, but then he had to admit that wasn't true, that it actually had taken place, in which Paxson pressured him to put pressure on the FCC, which McCain then did. He wrote a couple of letters to the FCC pushing them to come to a decision on this sale of a TV station. Now, this is almost exactly the same thing that happened in the Keating 5 scandal with McCain. But yet, when after that New York Times article, nobody followed up on this story, and because it doesn't cohere with the story that they've been telling for so long about John McCain, which was that he's the enemy of the special interests. But it looks like he's not the enemy of the special interests. And if you look at the record, you know, he was chairman of the Commerce Committee for many years and took millions of dollars from companies that had interest before the Commerce Committee and is chummy with their lobbyists, many of whom work for him today. So, again, we find that everything gets interpreted through the lens of this very admiring story that's been told about McCain, and when the facts don't cohere with that admiring story, the facts are ignored.
We're talking with Paul Waldman, co-author of Free Ride, John McCain and the Media. 1-800-642-1234 if you have a question for Paul, or if you want to agree or disagree with the premise that the national media in particular in love with John McCain and that he's treated differently than other politicians or presidential candidates. 1-800-642-1234 and Madison 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up, Kathleen Dunn with you. After 9 o'clock, Kathleen and her guest will discuss the violence that erupted in two of the largest cities in Iraq this week, threatening to destabilize a long-term truce. That's coming up after 9. We're talking with Paul Waldman, who is a columnist for The American Prospect and also co-author with David Brock of Free Ride, John McCain and the Media. Richard in Porterfield is with us next. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I was just wondering, you touched on the Keating 5 scandal a moment ago, and I was just wondering if because of his dealings with Russ Feingold and the Feingold-McCain Act, if that sort of absolved him from his dealings with the Keating 5? I'll take my answers up here. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
It's an excellent question, and for people who don't remember, this happened in 1989 and 1990. John McCain and four other senators who had gotten contributions from Charles Keating, who was an SNL operator, put pressure on federal regulators to go easy on Keating's SNL when it was collapsing. It ended up costing the taxpayers billions of dollars. The whole SNL scandal costed hundreds of billions of dollars, and the Keating's SNL was the worst of the lot. McCain got reprimanded by the Senate, and it turned out that he didn't just get contributions from Charles Keating. He was good friends with him. Keating had flown McCain and his family down to his vacation home in the Bahamas a number of times. McCain failed to report those in violation of Senate rules. And Cindy McCain and McCain's father-in-law had invested in real estate with Charles Keating. But what's interesting about this story is how it kind of got transformed. And McCain has had the ability to do this on a number of different occasions, where something that reflects very poorly on him, he finds a way to turn it around into a story that ends up being to his benefit and not to his detriment. So how is it that reporters now talk about the Keating Five scandal, which was really the first time most people in the country had heard of John McCain? Now it's a story of redemption. It's almost like George Bush's drinking. He had this sin early on in his career, and it turned him into the reformer that he is today. So it's a transformation story in which he's now redeemed, and he now then became the advocate for McCain-Feingold, and he became the enemy of the special interests. But if you look at the truth of his record, what you see in incidents like the one with Paxson Communications is that he's not really the enemy of the special interests. So it makes you wonder how much he really was redeemed. But that's the story that that they tell about Keating Five. Whenever it comes up, it's in the context of him now being this admirable reformer. And when the facts don't go along with the story, then the facts get ignored.
Remember back earlier in the primary season when John McCain made a comment, I think it was around Michigan's primary, that he didn't know that much about the economy. It wasn't his strong suit. And then in a subsequent debate, Tim Russert asked him this.
Senator McCain, you have said repeatedly, quote, "I know a lot less about economics than I do about military and foreign policy issues. I still need to be educated." Is it a problem for your campaign that the economy is now the most important issue, one that, by your own acknowledgement, you are not well-versed on?
Actually, I don't know where you got that quote from. I'm very well-versed in economics. I was there at the Reagan Revolution.
Well, Paul Waldman, did he say that or not?
He did, and despite his denial, I think he may have even said it more than once.
Right.
If you look at what he's actually proposing on the economy, it's kind of Bush plus. I mean, there was an analysis that was recently done, I believe by the Center for American Progress, that showed that McCain's tax proposals are even more tilted to the wealthy than George W. Bush's are. Despite the fact that included among his tax proposals is making permanent the Bush tax cuts, and this is also a major flip-flop that McCain has undergone. He coming out of the 2000 campaign, when he had his own tax plan and was very critical of Bush's, he voted against the Bush tax cuts in 2001. And his rationale at the time was that they were too tilted to the wealthy. Well, now he supports making those tax cuts permanent, and he denies that he was actually opposing them originally because they were too tilted to the wealthy. Now he says they weren't offset by spending cuts. So he's changed his story on that. I think that his tax plans are yet another area that hasn't really been explored. Now, it's likely that whoever the Democratic nominee is going to push him on this, given the state of the economy. We'll have to see if, when that happens, the subsequent reporting is really going to give us a full picture of what McCain's record is and what he wants to do in the future.
Yeah. Ted in Janesville, hi, you're on the air.
Yes, I'd like to talk about John McCain and veracity. You kind of touched on that a minute ago with the Tim Russert encounter. There was an example where there was a quote that had been recorded in various media, and John McCain said I never said that, but there's documentary evidence that he did say that. Similarly, after the New York Times piece emerged, John McCain said, well, I have never met with the head, I forget the name of the corporation. And the fact he had even conceded in his deposition, there was documentary evidence. Now, John McCain is not a stupid man, but repeatedly he makes statements that very clearly there exists documentary evidence that he's lying. Do you think he is so confident that he has the media in his hip pocket that he just assumes that he can get away with anything?
I think he probably is pretty confident about that. And again, this gets back to the question of how reporters interpret events and whether it coheres with the portraits that they've already been painting. You know, John McCain has expended enormous energy making himself into the reporter's best friend. And one of the consequences of that is it creates a reservoir of goodwill the result of which is that reporters will give him the benefit of the doubt. So if he says something like that, you know, like the Paxton communication issue, where he came out and said, oh, no, I never had a meeting with that guy. And then it turns out that not only did Bud Paxton himself say, yes, we had a meeting, but McCain a few years ago in a deposition admitted that he had a meeting. So he wasn't telling the truth then. So what do reporters do with that piece of information? Well, do they come out and say, write stories that say, well, John McCain now has a problem with veracity, that is he really an honest guy or not? They don't write that. Because why? Well, because they just know that John McCain is an honest guy. I mean, look at the way, for instance, somebody like Al Gore was treated. You know, we all remember that Al Gore said he invented the Internet, right? Well, Al Gore never said he invented the Internet. That was a manufactured lie that never occurred. But what happened at that time was that the reporters all just kind of thought that Al Gore was a phony. And so whenever there was even an accusation, even one that wasn't true, about something that Al Gore said that was supposedly false, the reporters would write stories saying, Al Gore has this truth problem. He can't seem to tell the truth. And they would use what happened on the campaign trail to reinforce that picture of Al Gore. When it's John McCain, even when he doesn't tell the truth, they're certainly not writing stories that say he has a truth problem, because he's built up all this goodwill with them, and they feel like they just know him, and they know that he's an honest guy, even if the facts say otherwise.
Yeah. Well, he doesn't always get off entirely scot-free. Here's Keith Olbermann from MSNBC.
McCain did say he wants to make more down payments more expensive for American home buyers, and in a stunning turn called for reform to provide transparency and accountability, and then actually said the way to prevent this kind of thing in the future is to remove what he calls regulatory impediments on financial institutions. This perhaps no surprise from the man who said in January 2000, quote, I didn't pay nearly the attention to economic issues in the past. I was probably a supply-sider based on the fact that I really didn't jump into the issue. And then said on November 2005, I know a lot less about economics than I do about military and foreign policy issues. I still need to be educated. And then said in December 2007, economics is something that I've never really understood as well as I should. I've never been involved in the financial stuff, the financial workings of the country. Perhaps explaining the senator's apparent trouble explaining a basic economic fact today.
Already, tight household budgets are getting tighter.
Well, Paul Waldman, Keith Olbermann, wasn't going to let him get away with all those statements, huh?
Yeah, well, Keith Olbermann is a lonely voice on cable news. You know, on cable news, there are something like 13 different programs that are devoted to a conservative spouting his conservative opinions. Keith Olbermann is the closest thing to a progressive on cable news, and he's all alone. The real question is not whether there's some commentator out there who is sort of speaking more of the truth, but what happens every single day on the news pages. That's where McCain really gets the most benefit. I mean, he has those pundits who are in his camp, too. I think no more so than Chris Matthews, who is just as ardent a fan as you could possibly find. But it's the reporters who are writing those news stories every single day who are building up and reinforcing and sustaining that picture of John McCain, that he's the maverick, that he's the straight talker, that he's the one who doesn't do anything out of calculation, that he's the one who's brimming over with integrity. That's what helps to sustain that picture of John McCain.
Yeah, you have a quote from Chris Matthews on the cover of your book. The press loves McCain. We're his base.
Indeed, and that's a joke that the McCain campaign started telling back in 2000, that the press was their base. And you know, the other day in the New York Times, his campaign manager Rick Davis was quoted as saying that McCain is the best earned media candidate in history. And earned media is a term of art in politics for press coverage. So even his campaign manager admits that nobody gets the kind of press coverage that John McCain gets.
Pat in New Glarus, hello, you're on the air.
Hi, just a brief comment and question. Much is made of McCain's record as a decorated pilot and prisoner of war during the wars in Southeast Asia. Have you any awareness of whether there's ever been any speculation as to the fact that McCain was actually piloting aircraft that were bombing urban centers, and that is considered a violation of the Geneva Conventions and is arguably a war crime? I'll take my answer off the air.
You know, I'm not I don't have details on exactly what the targets were of his bombing runs, but you know, I think that that people are very reluctant to talk about anything with regard to McCain's Vietnam service that is in any way reflects poorly on him, because you know, the fact is that whatever he did before in the years that he spent as a prisoner of war, you know, he endured terrible suffering and showed great courage, and nobody denies that. But I think that the most important question for the public right now is if, as is usually the case, the press is going to be consumed with the character of the candidates. It's certainly fair to talk about what McCain did 40 years ago. There's nothing wrong with that, but that's not the entirety of his story. That's a part of his story, and there's also the things that he's done since then, and that should be a part of the story that the press tells too, in its complete form, warts and all. And that's not the picture that we've been getting.
Yeah. Next we go to Larry in Wapaka. Hi, Larry, you're on the air.
Thank you. Yes, my question is, I suppose, a lot like the previous caller. I'm a Vietnam vet with the post-traumatic stress disorder, officially disabled, and my understanding that there are at least hundreds of thousands of post-Vietnam and Iraq and Afghan vets who suffer from this sort of thing. Now, a big part of the suffering has to do with the constant reminders, daytime and nighttime, about what we did wrong during the war. And I'm just wondering if anyone has looked into whether or not the senator doesn't suffer from this syndrome as well. And if so, it certainly could explain some of his behavior, I suppose, yeah. Such as...
Well, all right, such as forgetfulness or misstatements. Paul Waldman?
Well, I don't know if there's any evidence that he suffers from PTSD. But, you know, one of the interesting things about McCain is that, as I mentioned before, he has a real temper, a very prickly personality, and can be extremely vindictive. And interestingly enough, when you, the stories of what he, of him as a prisoner of war, it turns out that that actually served him very well, and that people who don't give in to their captors and are combative with them, there's some evidence that they end up being the ones who have the fewest lasting effects of that trauma. But the question now is, if he's going to be president of the United States, should we be talking about those aspects of his character? And there, you know, Washington is littered with people who have been yelled at and insulted and sworn at by John McCain, as is Arizona. But that's an aspect of his character that doesn't get discussed very much, because, you know, the press is much more likely to portray him as that sort of happy warrior who's you know, great fun to have to hang around with. And that's true in part, too, but the other part is a part of his personality also. And if they're going to be exploring personalities, as the press always does, then we as citizens deserve to get the full picture of who John McCain is.
Yeah, we have a couple of callers who are concerned that the impression was left that John McCain was somehow responsible for that explosion on the aircraft carrier that the one caller brought up. That's not the case, correct?
No, I don't think there's ever been any evidence that what happened on the Forrestal was his fault. I mean, he was there, and it was a terrible tragedy. But I don't think anyone's ever there's ever been any evidence that it was his fault.
Right. Okay. And very quickly, Bill in Madison, an email: is it true Karl Rove is running McCain's campaign?
He's not running his campaign, but he is giving him advice. They've had some meetings, and apparently Rove is in regular communication with the people who are running McCain's campaign. But what you do see is that a lot of the people who are in McCain's campaign are some of the same Bush people, same fundraisers, some of the same strategists. One of the interesting thing about the way that reporters report on the McCain campaign is it's sort of an extension of the way that they report on him, that this is a campaign that's not going to be going negative.
Yeah.
They're not going to be, you know, engaging in any kind of down and dirty tactics, but that's not necessarily true either.
We've got to leave it there. Thank you so much for being with us.
It's been my pleasure.
Paul Waldman, co-author of Free Ride, John McCain and the Media. Thanks to Carmen Jackson and to Christina Taylor for producing the hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.